The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in Egypt, "This month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb. Take a lamb for his family, one for each household. If any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share with their nearest neighbor, having taken into account the number of people there are. You are to determine the amount of lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. The animals you choose must be year-old males without defect, and you may take them from the sheep or the goats. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month, when all the people of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight. Then they are to take some of the blood and put it on the sides and tops of the door frames of the houses where they eat the lambs. That same night they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire, along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. Do not eat the raw meat or cooked in water, but roast it over the fire, head, legs, and inner parts. Do not leave any of it till morning. If some is left till morning, you must burn it. This is how you are to eat it: with your cloak tucked into your belt, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. Eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. On that same night, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn, both men and animals, and I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord. The blood will be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you when I strike Egypt." Now, moving on to verse 21. "Then Moses summoned all the elders of Israel and said to them, 'Go at once and select the animals for your families and slaughter the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop, dip it into the blood in the basin, and put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. Not one of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. When the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the top and sides of the door frame and will pass over that doorway, and he will not permit the destroyer to enter your houses and strike you down. Obey these instructions as a lasting ordinance for you and your descendants. When you enter the land that the Lord will give you as he promised, observe this ceremony. And when your children ask you, 'What does this ceremony mean to you?' then tell them, 'It is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, who passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt and spared our homes when he struck down the Egyptians.' Then the people bowed down and worshipped. The Israelites did just what the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron. And at midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night, and there was loud wailing in Egypt, for there was not a house without someone dead." And moving over to chapter 13 and verse 11. "After the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and gives it to you, as he promised on oath to you and your forefathers, you are to give over to the Lord the first offspring of every womb. All the firstborn males of your livestock belong to the Lord. Redeem with a lamb every firstborn donkey, but if you do not redeem it, break its neck. Redeem every firstborn among your sons. In days to come, when your son asks you, 'What does this mean?' say to him, 'With a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. When Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed every firstborn in Egypt, both man and animal. This is why I sacrifice to the Lord the first male offspring of every womb and redeem each of my firstborn sons. And it will be like a sign on your hand and a symbol on your forehead that the Lord brought us out of Egypt with his mighty hand.
We just sang those words. Once again, I'm reminded I'm broken inside. And I've had that sort of day. I don't know about your day, but my day's been a day of brokenness, where it's been very evident to me that there's nothing in me that's worthy. So, with that bright, cheery note, Tom, let's start, shall we? Stuart did a little bit of this. He talked to us about where we've got to in the series. And we're going to do that as well, just quickly to get us all onto the same page. And I've got some questions that will come up. Taylor in the garden is where we started, Genesis chapter 3. Adam and Eve have sinned. They've covered up their nakedness inadequately with their own aprons made of fig leaves, and it didn't work. But God knew their sin, saw their shame, and killed an animal to make a covering. The skin that covered them must have come from a dead animal. So we had the first sacrifice. Then we saw that actually they didn't stay in the garden, did they? God covered their nakedness, but they were expelled from the garden. So it didn't end well. Next, we saw the ark. We saw sin coming to fruition. And almost like a fresh start, God judges the world and wipes out those who are most sinful. And we see his provision with the ark. We see Noah's faith to make the ark. It never rained. And he was told, make an ark because I'm going to flood the earth. It never happened. And he did it. And he got in. We saw God close the door behind him. It was God's plan. It was God's plan. But actually, as they come off the ark, and Sam brought this out to us, the plan to make the world better by eradicating sin through judgment had failed because Noah was very quickly sinning again. Then we saw Abraham and Isaac. We saw God's right to require a sacrifice. We saw Abraham's faith in taking his son Isaac up onto the mountain to make that sacrifice. And we saw on the mountain of the Lord will provide. A ram caught in a thicket, sacrificed in place of Isaac. So as this picture builds up of salvation, we see the son's submission. Isaac didn't have to go up that mountain with his father. He was younger and stronger and faster, but the son submitted. And we saw the substitution, and we saw the resurrection, which Hebrews told us. Abraham received him back as from the dead. So every time we've seen a bit more about salvation. Now, as we listen, I want you to think about these three questions. I prepare students for their exams. Some of their questions are long questions. They've got a page and a half, 2 pages to read. And our top tip, top exam tip for you, is go to the end and read the requirement. Then read all the detail. So your three questions that you need to watch out for are, how is this picture different from the earlier pictures of salvation? If we were seeing God's plan of salvation only from Genesis through to the middle of Exodus, what do we learn now that we didn't know before? Matthew Mundy, it's like a nagging voice in my ear. What do we see different? Why are we telling it the salvation from here? How does it point to Christ? So I want you to be thinking, what are the similarities? I'll draw them out. I might miss some that you spot. Tell me afterwards if I do. And then in what ways is Christ superior? Because always the picture is less than the reality of Christ and what Christ has done. Firstly then, have we any right in saying that this is a picture of Christ? Well, Paul, in writing to the Corinthians, said, 1 Corinthians 5:7, don't look it up, for Christ our Passover lamb has been sacrificed. So I'm going to take that as good authority, that we're not barking up the wrong tree here. We've got the right thing going on. But we are talking about the Exodus. We're talking about Passover in the book of Exodus. How do we get here? Well, Abraham and Isaac went back down the mountain. Isaac bore a son, Jacob. Jacob bore 12 sons. They became the children of Israel. the 12 tribes. The world is getting, the world's in famine. One of the sons is down in Egypt already. They go down and they are fed by Joseph, who feeds the whole world at the time. So that's how they got there. They were high society when they turned up in Egypt, because this was the prime minister who wasn't going to be removed by anybody, because he was feeding the world. But it hasn't stayed that way. Exodus chapter 1, verse 8 and 9, a new king has arisen. Hardly surprising, it's nearly 400 years later, a new king is on the throne, and the new king didn't know about Joseph. He said, look, these people, the Israelites, have become much too numerous. There were 70, now there's a million. Let us deal shrewdly with them. Now, his shrewd dealings were to take the boys and throw them in the Nile to kill them. So I think that was harsh rather than shrewd. Exodus 1, verse 22. Moses is one of those boys, and he is rescued in an ark out of the river Nile and brought up by Pharaoh's daughter. He has a failed attempt to get involved in helping his people, and he leaves the country. From the royal house, he goes into the desert and becomes a shepherd king. And for 40 years, he's being prepared to come back. Exodus chapter 2, verse 25. God heard their groanings, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham. That was a promise of a land, a people, and his presence. He made his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. This kicks off God's rescue plan. And in the wilderness, Moses meets God. Exodus 3, verse 14, God reveals himself by his name. God reveals himself by his name. God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent you. That is God giving a name that he's never given before to commission Moses for this rescue. And Spencer, I can't say all the words Spencer does when he comes to I am, but they're great words, aren't they? It's a present continuous. It's an always energetically acting God, who's not reliant on anybody else, self-sustaining from eternity past to eternity future, all-powerful, promise-keeping God. He's seen, he's concerned, he's going to keep his promise. And Pharaoh has got the children in slavery, the children of Israel in slavery, God's people in slavery, and the battle lines are drawn. A key verse for us to understand what's going to happen is Exodus 4, verses 21 to 23. A few key verses then. So Exodus 4, 21. The Lord said to Moses, when you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders I have given you the power to do. But I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Then say to Pharaoh, this is what the Lord says. Israel, my firstborn son, I told you, Israel is my firstborn son. And I told you, Pharaoh, let my son go so that he may worship me. But you refuse to let him go. So I will kill your firstborn son. That's the battle. That's the battle lines. Pharaoh is standing up against the Lord Almighty, against I am. And we see now Moses and Aaron go into Pharaoh. They give this message to Pharaoh. Chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh, the king, and said, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go so that they may hold a festival to me in the wilderness. Pharaoh says, who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord. I will not let Israel go. So God has laid down the terms, and Pharaoh is picking a fight. It's an uneven fight. It's a fight that lasts 10 rounds purely because God is demonstrating a point. Only in his purpose does it go 10 rounds, because clearly God could have ended the fight very quickly. But we see Israel as God's son, God's firstborn. And we see a strong man holds God's firstborn captive. A strong man, the superpower of the day, their king, says, I won't let you go. And I don't know who your God is. He's going to find out who their God is. So the people like Moses to start with. Then Pharaoh makes their life harder. The people stop liking Moses because he's a leader who's brought the Israelites more hard work, more bondage, more bitterness. But the promise that comes is a promise to rescue from slavery to the promised land. That was the promise to Abraham. So Exodus 6, verses 6 to 8. If you've got those in front of you, that'd be fantastic. Exodus 6, 6 to 8. Therefore say to the Israelites, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them. And I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. So we start to see things that are different, don't we, from what we had before. We've seen an enemy. Well, perhaps we'd have that a little bit back in the garden. But now we see an enemy standing up to God and God asserting his power over that enemy. And we see a people. There's a people promise here, the promise to Abraham, I will give you this land, I will be your God and you will be my people. It's going to come, yeah. Great as the sand on the shore. So, people, promise, place, freedom from slavery and a freedom to something. Our faith is about a freedom from and a freedom to. Freedom from sin and the fear of death and a freedom to life. Now, I want you to notice that there are things that are the same as we've seen before. This salvation relies on God's faithfulness, not the people's. Exodus 6, verse 9, Moses reported this to the Israelites, but they didn't listen to him because of their discouragement and hard labour. Can't be true. Life's rubbish. We don't believe it. But God has made the promise. And the promise relies on I am. Relies on the eternal, all-powerful, ever-acting, self-sustaining God. And then we get to the battle commencing proper. We get to the plagues. Now, we're not going to go through all the plagues, but I want to draw out a few things about some of the plagues. It's in the Lord's purpose, I said, that this battle lasts 10 rounds, but we won't look at all of those plagues. The first plague, Moses goes to meet Pharaoh at the Nile, and Moses turns the Nile into blood. Significance there is that's where the babies have been killed. That's where the boys have been thrown. Significance there actually is the Nile is like a god to Egypt. It's the source of purity and the source of prosperity. And God goes straight for that source of purity and prosperity for the land. And straight to where his people have been harmed. But Pharaoh's magicians can match it. I'm not sure why they want to turn water into blood, because it's a problem. But they do the same. Then frogs, apparently another Egyptian deity. But that's copied by the magicians, as if they didn't have enough frogs in their houses when Moses called the frogs out. And then we start to see some bits where there's a difference. The flies, chapter 8, verse 22. God deals differently with his people. So Exodus 8, verse 22. But on that day, I will do differently with the land of Goshen. That's where the children of Israel live, where my people live. No swarms of flies will be there, so that they will know that I, the Lord, am in the land, in this land. I will make a distinction between my people and your people. This sign will occur tomorrow. God deals differently with his people. God loves and protects and deals differently with his people. Same happens with the livestock. Not one of the animals in Goshen, where the children of Israel are, not one of those dies, but they do in the rest of the land of Egypt. Then we've got something different with the hail. There is a means of escape with the hail. So if you turn to chapter 9, we'll look at verses 18 to 21 in chapter 9. It's all nice and close together, isn't it? We're not running too far away. So Exodus 9, 18 to 21. Therefore, at this time tomorrow, I will send the worst hailstorm that has ever fallen on Egypt. From the day it was founded until now. Get my teeth back in. Give an order now to bring your livestock and everything you have in the fields to a place of shelter, because the hail will fall on every person and animal that has not been brought in and is still out in the field, and they will die. Those officials of Pharaoh who feared the word of the Lord hurried to bring their slaves and their livestock inside. But those who ignored the word of the Lord left their slaves and their livestock in the field. So God provides a way of escape. Even for the Egyptians, there's a way of escape. Goshen didn't have any hail. The Egyptians did, and the Egyptians had a way of escape. Again, we're seeing more about salvation, aren't we? That there is a way out that God provides. Then there's darkness. The sun god of Egypt has had his lights punched out by Yahweh. And Pharaoh's had enough. Pharaoh said, go, but don't take your animals with you. Moses said, we've got to take the animals because we've got to sacrifice. And we don't know which ones to sacrifice until we get there. So the compromise from Pharaoh doesn't work. And almost like, well, let's join the narrative. Pharaoh's hard heart, this is in chapter 11, end of chapter 10. So chapter 10, verse 27, but the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he was not willing to let them go. Pharaoh said to Moses, get out of my sight. Make sure you do not appear before me again. The day you see my face, you will die. He's got a God complex going on, I think, Pharaoh, hasn't he? And he's in battle with Yahweh. He's in battle with I Am. Moses says, just as you say, I will never appear before you again. Anybody a fan of Columbo? I used to love Columbo. He used to always be, you know, the person who's done the crime, just thought they got away with it, and Columbo just says, there's one more thing. And they crumbled. Well, there's a Columbo moment here. Pharaoh said, get out of my sight. You see me again, you die. And this is what he says. This is what he says. So Moses said, chapter 11, verses 4 and 5, this is what the Lord says. About midnight, I will go throughout Egypt. Every firstborn son in Egypt will die. From the firstborn son of Pharaoh, who sits on the throne, to the firstborn son of the female slave, who is at her handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle as well. And God will deal with his people in Goshen differently. Verse 7, but among the Israelites, not a dog will bark at any person or animal. Then you will know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. The Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. Judgment is coming. Does it seem fair that God is going to judge the firstborn in Egypt, the firstborn son? Well, Pharaoh's thrown all of the boys of Israel in the Nile, or had them thrown in the Nile. So God is actually merciful in his judgment. But what I hope we'll see in this judgment that's coming is that God saves Israel from judgment in the Passover. God saves Israel, deals with them differently, and God rescues Israel through judgment as well. This is the plague, the death of the firstborn, that says, right, you can go. Where the enemy is defeated and Israel can go. They were saved through judgment and the strong man is defeated. They were saved from judgment when the destroyer passed over. But there were differences some of the plagues before, actually. In Goshen, there wasn't the hail. In Goshen, there wasn't the flies, I think I've got these right. Now, they have to act. The Israelites have to do something to be saved from this judgment. And this day is so important that the whole calendar changes. So we're now into the passages that Vincent read for us. This day is so important that the whole calendar changes, and it's to be remembered every year. If you're American, you'll celebrate the 4th of July with hot dogs and fireworks. We lived there for a while. Somebody says, is this your first 4th of July? I've had 30 plus of them. I've had loads of them. First time we've made such a fuss of it, but we've had plenty. For us, bonfire night maybe, November the 5th. Remember that? Christmas. Well, for the Jews, it's Passover. And the month Abib becomes the first month. Their whole calendar is shifted around this. And it's going to be a memorial for them forever. A future ordinance, as we had. Every year, they're going to remember this. The family's going to come together and we're going to remember every year this thing that happened. So in Abraham and Isaac, we saw the provision of a lamb in place of the son. In the Passover, we see the provision of a lamb for the family. The 10th day, go and take a lamb of the right size. Bring it into your house for 4 days. I'm not going to explain that bit because I don't understand that bit. Why they had the lamb in the house for 4 days. They didn't at this stage. This was an emergency situation and they acted straight away. There's a meal, there's the family, there's unity. It's in our house, it's protected. It's those who belong who take part in the meal. Nobody frivolously. But I want you to see what happens. The details there. In verse 3, Dad's doing the shopping. So the head of the house, the father, goes and selects a lamb. The father provides the lamb. Does that point to Christ? Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world, said John when he saw Jesus come to be baptized. The father selects the lamb. Verse 5 tells us the lamb is 1 year old. That's a prime age. Jesus was 33 years old, a prime age. In his prime, he was cut down. Verse 5, a lamb without defect. Not one that was a bit sickly and going to die anyway. We've got the cream of the crop. We've got the best. And that's the one that we're going to sacrifice. And of course, we know that that Jesus is without spot or wrinkle. So 1 Peter 1, verses 18 and 19. For you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver and gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. It points to Christ, the perfect, sinless Lamb of God. And verse 5, the lamb is to be picked from the flock, from amongst the flock, not a straggler, not some random lamb that you found wandering about, lost like sheep are, from amongst the flock. And the commentators talk about the fact that the lamb was to be representative. The lamb was to be part of the people. And Jesus, the carpenter's son, took on flesh and became like us. And that passage in Hebrews said he had to become like us so that we could be rescued by him. He had to become flesh to rescue us and make us his brothers. To slaughter the lamb, verse 6 tells us at twilight, darkness comes over the earth. Christ, the darkness came over the cross when he was slaughtered. And then verses 7 of chapter 12 and verse 22 of chapter 12. There's an odd arrangement of the passage. There's some repetition going on. Chapter 11 is the warning that the plague is coming, the firstborn. Chapter 12 starts with the institution. God tells Moses, this is what you're to do. And this is the remembrance. Then he hands that down to the elders who go away and do what they're told to do. Verse 7 of chapter 12 tells us that they are to paint the door frames with the blood. Verse 22 tells us they're to use hyssop. They take hyssop and they paint the blood onto the door frame. Hyssop is used in purifying rituals. It's regarded as being a purifying thing in their religious rituals. So there's the purity. And the blood is on the side of the doors, on the lintel above the door, and you're to stay in until morning. Just imagine being the firstborn son in that house that night. Do you imagine nagging your dad? Have you done it yet, Dad? It's not twilight yet, son. Not done it yet. Have you done it yet, Dad? We'll wait until it's twilight. Have you painted the door frame, Dad? Yep. The sides and the top, Dad? Yep. What time is it now, Dad? Is it midnight yet? Has the danger passed yet? Has the destroyer passed over yet? You can imagine the tension, can't you? You can imagine the tension. And they stayed in the shelter. Actually, there's a verse that we ought to just draw your attention to because it stands out as different to so many other things. Chapter 12, verse 28. The Israelites did just what the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron. They did. Did they know that God was a God of judgment? Well, they'd seen 9 plagues so far. There was no reason to think he wasn't a God who spoke and acts. And they've trusted him and they've undertaken this ceremony. And you stay inside. You stay in the shelter. They've obeyed and now they wait. They did what was required of them and they evade the judgment. Just a little bit more detail on the meal. The meat is roasted. The sacrifice took the full heat. As Christ took the full heat of wrath, Christ took the full heat of hell for us. If you jump forward to chapter 12, verse 46, you'll see it's been eaten inside one house. Take none of the meat outside the house. Do not break any of the bones. Does that remind you of a lamb who was sacrificed for people? Not one of his bones was broken. The prisoner either side had their legs broken, but not Christ. To be taken with bitter herbs to remind them of the hard labour and the bitter experience in slavery. They have been saved from slavery. They've been saved from this bitter hardship. Every year, the bitter herbs will remind them of what they've been saved from. They're to eat it with bread made without yeast, yeast speaking of sin. So like the hyssop, the absence of yeast speaks of purity. And they're to eat stood up. Did you see that? Some of us mourn the fact, regret the fact that families don't sit down for meals together. Our son chastises you if you've got your phone at the table, and rightly so. Sit down, spend time. Not fast food. But this meal was taken stood up with your running shoes on and your robes tucked in, ready to roll. Why? Because they were escaping. And they were escaping to a better land. They were leaving the bitterness of the herbs to the land flowing with milk and honey. They were leaving slavery to slavery to freedom. So they took this, stood up, looking for a better country. Who is covered? Well, chapter 12, verse 43 tells us that it's those in the nation who are covered. Chapter 12, verse 43. I'll go for my little print Bible rather than my big print stuff that I've got out of order now. 12, verse 43. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, these are the regulations for the Passover. No foreigner is to eat it. That jars, doesn't it? That jar with us, that's a bit racist. Saying no foreigner will eat it. Well, it's not the end of the story, actually. Chapter 12, verse 48. An alien, that is somebody from outside the people, an alien living among you who wants to celebrate the Lord's Passover must have all the males in his household circumcised. then he may take part in it like one born in the land. No uncircumcised male may eat of it. So it was open to any. But there was a price. You had to be identified. You had to be in. So the covenant, being in the covenant, comes with a cost. God's people are distinct, but God's rescue is wide open. Do you notice the sacrifice is made and the blood is displayed? When the sacrifice is made and the blood is displayed, then when judgment comes, and judgment came, when judgment comes, the Lord, the Avenger, passes over the house. So chapter 12, which you can pop him back there. Chapter 12, verse 23. How does it work? When the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on top and the sides of the door frame and will pass over that doorway. He will not permit the destroyer to enter your house and strike you down. If the lamb has been killed, then enough blood has been shed. If there's evidence that the lamb has been killed, then no more blood needs to be shed. It would be unjust of God to give that provision and then require the blood of the firstborn. The substitute blood satisfies and means they escape judgment. But judgment did come, didn't it? We saw that in chapter 12 and verses 29 to 30. At midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night. There was a loud wailing in Egypt, for there was not one house without someone dead. Judgment came. It was warned about, and it came. Devastating judgment. From Pharaoh to the prisoner, from the highest to the lowest, everyone lost someone. And at that time, the whole hope for the family, the whole hope for the nation would be tied up in the firstborn. And they're gone. And they're gone. But not for Egypt. Not for Israel. Not for those who've got the blood of the Lamb displayed on the door. They are saved. They are saved from judgment. But I said there's salvation through judgment as well. Victory through judgment. Because, well, Pharaoh has said you can go but you can't take the animals. Pharaoh has said you're never going to see my face again or you will die. He calls Moses back. 12 verse 31. Pharaoh summons Moses and Aaron and says, up, leave my people, you and the Israelites, go. No conditions, just go. Just go. Take your women, take your children, take your flocks, take your herds. Interesting what he also says in verse 32. Take your flocks and herds, as you have said, and go. And also bless me. Remember we started in chapter 5? I don't know this I am that you speak of, and I will not let you go. Well, with 10 rounds against Jehovah, you go. And actually, would the spokesman of Jehovah bless me? The strong man is defeated, and the strong man is looking for a blessing. And it says, chapter 12, verse 38, many other people went up with them. This salvation was more than just the nation, not just Abraham's physical seed. Anyone who put the paint, the blood on the doorway was saved. Anyone who wanted to could leave with the people. And then they've been saved to a promised land. They're going to go to the promised land. And when they get to the promised land, the Passover is going to be celebrated as a victory. It's a memorial, and it's also a victory. Do you see the words that were in there? When your son asks you, Why are you doing this? And your son says, why do you do this? Well, you do it because the Lord, when we were in Egypt, the Lord rescued us. The Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. So this is chapter 13, let's pick up at verse 11. Chapter 13, verse 11. After the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and gives it to you, they've reached the promised land, as he promised on oath to your ancestors, you are to give over to the Lord the first offspring of every womb. All the firstborn males of your livestock belong to the Lord. Redeem with a lamb every firstborn donkey, but if you do not redeem it, break its neck. Redeem every firstborn among your sons. So substitution continues. But I want to point you to verse 14 and beyond. In days to come, when your son asks you, what does this mean? Say to him, with a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. When Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed the firstborn of both people and animals in Egypt. That is why I sacrifice to the Lord every firstborn offspring of every womb and redeem each of my firstborn sons. It'll be like a sign on your hand and a symbol on your forehead that the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. This judgment on Pharaoh brings deliverance, brings salvation, and a new land, and the promised fulfillment for Israel. And they're to remember it as victory. They're to remember it as victory. So what have we seen that's different to the earlier pictures? Well, I think it's reinforced sacrifice and substitute. And that carries on. It reinforces God's provision for the people. It tells us, perhaps in a new and more powerful way, that God treats his people differently. It does also tell us that anyone can be one of God's people. What's new, I think, is the enemy. We haven't seen a battle with anyone before, but there is a strong man. There is a strong man who holds people slave to sin. And Jesus has broken the power of the strong man. We are under slavery to sin and to death. And Christ has secured the victory for us. So in what ways does it point to Christ? All that stuff around the lamb and the perfection and the bone, no bones broken, all of that points forward. But it points forward also to Christ's victory over death. We were slaves to sin and to death. What way is Christ superior? Well, Christ takes us to a new and perfect land, a new Jerusalem. Matthew, next week, will tell us what happens when the children get out of Egypt and how well that goes. And they need rescuing again. Christ has done a once for all rescue for us. We don't need rescuing again. He's done it all.